For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
All right, let's do it. Block Party's out. I'm your host, Michael Wall. Thanks for watching. If you're enjoying, please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Check out our YouTube channel, Process to Perform, if you want to watch all the film breakdown and analysis we'll do, especially during the preseason and season into the playoffs, certainly with the Green Bay Packers and other teams. You can check me out, MikeWall68, on X or Twitter, or Process to Perform on Instagram. Thank you to the Believe Network. And as always, our show is sponsored by Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season, from baseball, golf, soccer, right down to the top fights in the UFC and mixed martial arts, boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head over to our online casino and get in on the game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slot games. So head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BELIEVE for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online. The game starts here. I've been watching a ton of soccer. I'm a huge soccer. We're a soccer family. I thought we were a football fan. I thought I was going to have a football family when I retired. My daughter and my son both play soccer. Heavily into the Euros. The CONCACAF which is the U.S. is in, and they had a terrible game last night. It's a tough watch compared, I think, to the quality of some of the teams in Europe. Obviously, Argentina and Brazil are different. Colombia's, you know, there's some good teams here, and certainly in South and Latin America. But you get north of Guadalajara, man, there's not a lot of good squads. It's tough. But we're talking football here. Preseason's right around the corner. The Packers are set to start, I believe, on Monday the 22nd. We're going to have about 2 weeks, and then they play the Browns in the first of three preseason games. I believe that's on August 10th. So, really, you're looking at right now, and thank God the Euros are on and the CONCACAF's on, because this is the worst time in sports. This is the absolute – I mean, when I was a kid and you're in that time between the – you know, you're waiting – the NBA Finals are over. Congratulations to the Celtics. Nobody cares about baseball anymore, and you're waiting for training camp. Like, this is it. I mean, it is – it's just sad out there, because you have to go on these sports radio talk shows, and it's, you know, obviously it's more about content creation than anything else now, instead of talking about maybe some of that. We could talk about the politics, I guess, of the Biden-Trump speech last night, but good Lord. It's fair to say when Randall Cobb's house starting to flame is front page news in Green Bay, it's like, it's time for football season. Like, we gotta get going. Thank God everybody was all right, but you understand my point. So I usually don't do this kind of stuff, but I'm going to do a five biggest questions heading in, from my perspective, heading in to training camp this year. I think the Green Bay Packers are a very interesting team, obviously, coming off of, you know, going deep into the playoffs, just the way they ended the season in general. But there are some big questions. We obviously added some pieces to the team. We lost two enormous pieces to this team, Aaron Jones and David Bakhtiari. So this list is just based on what I saw for the end of last season. What has been the moves that have been made by Goody and company in the offseason, obviously bringing in a new defensive coordinator as well. Just two quick points, I think. First, I think hiring policy to succeed Mark Murphy as president and CEO of the Packers, I think that's a real smart move. I don't think you necessarily need to have a football guy there. You know, Goody has really been a great steward for this organization. I look at Goody as the head of this program. I know some people are going to debate whether or not that's the head coach or the general manager. I look at Goody as being the head of this program. I think the program is in good hands. Tremendous leadership. He's obviously been there for decades. I think policy has been there. I believe I read he's been there for 8 or 12 years. So I always like, especially when you're in Green Bay, the idea that you have an internal hire. You know, mainly because Green Bay doesn't have an owner. It's a smaller community. It's a smaller market. And unless you're there and living it and understand the history and understand the way that the community interacts with the team and vice versa, I just don't know that you get it. Like, I don't think you can bring in a guy from, like, you know, New York, a big hotshot lawyer, and come in and drop him into Wisconsin and go, all right, you're going to run this team, and they would get it. I think they just somehow try to bastardize it. I think they try to turn him into the Dallas Cowboys, which certainly is not what not what anybody wants to do. I think they're such a unique organization. They're bringing an outsider in at this stage. They might invite some issues the club isn't used to. And the second thing is, the second point for me, before I kind of get into these questions, because I'm sure this could have been one of the questions, is I do love the Jeff Hafley hire on paper. I've talked about this before. What he's laid out to the media in terms of his approach to development, the scheme that he's going to run, and we did a couple breakdowns on what he looked like at Boston College and kind of try to extrapolate what's that going to look like for the Packers a little bit. We did that a couple of weeks ago. Talk about his philosophy. You know, time is going to tell exactly how the players respond to some people on the new staff, but certainly a new coaching style, a new scheme. You know, you hope that the language and the communication and everything is just elevated. You know, you certainly hope that it's elevated, but you don't know until we get into it. The play calling is going to be different. Even if you're running the same scheme, two different guys, more often than not, the play calling is going to be different. How that communication is held on the field, who's responsible for what. Is he an adept play caller? You know, I mean, that's at the very, very basic. Is he a better play caller than the prior regime? I love that on paper, there's a much higher level of aggression and aggressiveness to this system based on how it's set up. You think you're going to have more penetration at the defensive line. You're going to have more, you're going to be running like a four down line, which is usually more penetration, not as many two gapping. You're going to have a lot of safety in the box. Like, a lot of this stuff, you're going to go, yeah, but Mike, we're a nickel with this and that. Okay. But philosophically, when you install a defense, you start with a base idea and philosophy. And generally, if you start with, like, you know, if you start with the Patriots 34 back in the day, you're starting from a truth that I'm hiring a Will Fork, a Ty Warren, a Richard Sears, guys that are phenomenal at what they do, but they're not penetrating three techniques. Okay. That had its place, and Belichick and company were able to draft guys that were perfect for their scheme, but didn't necessarily fit into some other schemes. So he was getting kind of the cream of the crop because he changed what the definition of success or definition of prototype player was for outside linebacker, inside linebacker, nose tackle, and their four or five techniques. So, like, that in itself was phenomenal. I guess my point, I'll go back to, I don't want to get off too off topic, but I really like how aggressive this guy is on paper. I think at the second and third level, in particular of the defense, they have to improve. I think everybody knows that. And so if you can see an improved level of aggressiveness there, and we'll talk about this, one of the questions, if you can see an improved level of aggressiveness there, especially particularly on that second level of defense, then I think we really have something. So that said, let me get into my five questions in no particular order, by the way. Number one, can Jordan Love become the face of the NFC North? Right now, I think the Giants are I think the Lions are the favorites, rightfully so, in the NFC North. And I think if you were going to ask anybody outside of Wisconsin, you would say that Dan Campbell, Jared Goff, that is the face of the NFC North. Jared Goff and Jordan Love, both first-round draft picks. I think Jared Goff was either first or second. Obviously, with the Rams, the whole situation, we know the story. He's turned out just to be a really, really good football player in Detroit. I think a lot of that has to do with Ben Johnson, the work he's done with him. Obviously, bringing in Mark Brunell was a huge component of that. So let's say Ben, from a scheme standpoint, I know Ben, he's a master at that. But also bringing in a former all-pro quarterback to work with that guy on the daily has obviously paid huge dividends. Goff last year, 407 of 605, 4,575 yards, 30 touchdowns, 12 picks. Jordan Love, 372 of 579, 4,159 yards, 32 touchdowns, 11 picks. So the big difference here is, for me, if you look at these offenses, Packers are losing what I thought was the best playmaker on the field for them is Aaron Jones. He added so much value to the offense. We're going to talk about this a little bit later with the offensive line, but you just think about what he gives Jordan Love, not only in the passing game, not only in the running game, not only the protection game, but the fact that you have to, as a defense, scheme for who's in the backfield one versus another. Dylan's in the backfield, not A.J. Dillon's a good player. They're not hyper-focused on him. Aaron Jones is in the backfield. He's one of those guys that they come in on Wednesday as a defensive group and go, this is the guy we have to stop. That's gone now, and how that's going to play out is going to probably go a long way to determine, you know, a lot of things about our play calling, the execution of this offense in general. Jared Goff has weapons all over the – proven weapons all over the field. He's got – we already talked about Laporta bringing in him from Iowa, just a monster year. He's got two monster running backs, change of pace guy in Jahmyr Gibbs that's electric. Obviously, Montgomery's a huge player. Amon-Ra St. Brown and company, Reynolds. They're just really, really good players all over the board. One of the best offensive lines in football. And so he's the table set for him to really – establish himself as his dominant player in the quarterback discussion in the NFC. But to a certain extent, we can say the same about Jordan Love. And I, you know, for me, to be honest with you, this is as much about Ben Johnson versus Matt LaFleur as play callers as anything else. Ben Johnson, to me, when you just watch the sequencing of plays over the course of the entire season, not an individual game or an individual quarter, but he's getting up there, or he's already there with a Shanahan, with a Sean. The guys that you were thinking like, man, these guys really know what they're doing. They're putting their guys in positions to be successful, and they just have a knack for making the right play call and communicating in the right way with that quarterback, that receiver room, etc. Like, I just think Ben, I don't know how he's going to be as a head coach, but I think Ben is as good as there is right now as a play caller. Now, Matt LaFleur showed you last year what a great head coach he was down the stretch. He showed you what a good play caller he was down the stretch. But now you've got another like thing to prove. You lose your best play. Your two best players are gone on offense. You lost David Bakhtiari. He has been gone for a while. He was your best player. Let's not make any mistakes about that. And Aaron Jones is your best skill position guy that you've had there for the last 5 years. So what does that look like now? If you want Jordan Love to overtake Jared Goff as the face of the NFC North, which I think he's perfectly capable of doing, it's going to be as much about Matt LaFleur as it is anything else. I will say this about the last point about Jordan Love. For me, getting this contract done before training camp is absolutely mission critical. This is not one of those things that you need as a distraction. I know that everybody says, oh, nobody's distracted, blah, blah, blah. If he has a good game, what does that mean for his contract? If he has a bad game, is that if he has two bad games in a row, if they start slow, if the defense isn't playing well, if they put him in bad positions, if they're trying some new stuff because Aaron Jones isn't there and he doesn't look as good until they figure it out. Having to listen to the questions about his contract is a distraction enough. Doesn't need it. Get the deal done. It's going to be $50, $55 million a year. Dude's going to be unbelievably rich. Everyone's going to be happy for him. He seems like an incredible guy. He is, you know, I saw one of the talking heads on ESPN said he's the, you know, the guy behind Pat Mahomes right now to start a franchise with. Listen, that's a really fun debate for all these experts. There's a lot of really good quarterbacks out there, but Jordan Love's certainly in that conversation right now, but he has proven it, at least in a small sample size, that he can deliver. Now, what is that second year going to look like as a starter when people have watched more tape on you, people have more tendencies on you? How are you going to continue to evolve and adjust? And then obviously, what does that relationship with your young receiver, young tight end room look like? How much are you going to get out of Josh Jacobs being the last thing? So question one. Now question two. How does Quay Walker take the next step and become a more aggressive run defender in this new defense? So we've talked about that second level of the defense needing to be more aggressive. Hopefully with the new DC, the new system, the new philosophy, the new communication, the new attention to detail, the new development standards. Hopefully we are better at identifying, attacking downhill and making plays on at the line, at or behind the line of scrimmage. We saw last year, I showed it multiple times on film, when you put Quay in a stunt, he's a better player because when he is allowed to embrace his gifts and play free, structure frees you. Structure frees you. If I am being told where to go, I can now express my personality, my play style, and how I get there, what I do when I get there. If there's somebody in my way, how do I deal with it? So as you develop as a player, structure can free you, and then we can change the structure as you continue to evolve. And I think that's where they're at with Quay. In this offseason, are they able to help him automate his technique, his block destruction, help him improve his, not football IQ, but football acumen in the sense that how fast can I go from reading a situation to reacting to get to a spot? And then are we going to be in a position where we're going to play more of a fill and spill instead of over than a scrape over? How are we going to play the linebackers so that they're always thinking like, I got to get to my spot downhill. I want to have confrontation at or behind the line of scrimmage. The one thing that can happen when you put in a penetrating four down off or defensive line is that, like, for example, if you have a double team on Kenny Clark up to Quay, and Kenny just decides, nope, I'm going to take out the tackle and drive him into the backfield. And the guard is going to take those two steps and kind of whiff on Kenny. And now he's going to try to redirect and get to Quay. That speed is actually better for Quay because he has more time to get off that block and get around. If you're holding and you're trying to take a double and they can walk you back, that is more difficult for the linebacker because he really has nowhere to go. You basically have like three bodies moving at you, right? So if you're an offensive lineman and you're working on double teams, you're always trying to move that human back to the linebacker at the second level because that linebacker's got nowhere to go. If you have a penetrator at the defensive tackle, especially one that likes the what we just say one gap, what we talked about last year is instead of trying to take on a double, sometimes we'll just attack a single and make it a single block. That should help free up Quay to not only identify where the ball's going or where it should be going, but also gives him a little more time to react to what he sees and get off that block. Now, we brought in Ezra and Cooper. Look, you love the draft pick. You love him on tape, but he is a similar kind of player. He's actually a little bit smaller. If they can provide tackles for loss throughout the season without having to like up the amount of run sets that are required, that's fantastic. If this team just needs to continue to call up run stunts because they want to put him in specific positions, that's okay, but there's also opportunities for big plays, right? Anytime you have that structure, if the other team can identify it before the snap and make adjustments, well, you do have problems then. My question is, with those two guys, with Quay in particular, because he's the older player now, are you able to, in the course of just regular base calls, defensive play, are you able to improve your ability to run downhill and be aggressive? Or is this where Isaiah McDuffie comes in as a person who's played for this defensive coordinator, as a person who's demonstrated his ability to play downhill, and with the addition of more 12, more 21 personnel in the NFL, is this a guy who, even though he's still undersized, likes to thump, likes to play downhill, likes to play on the other side of the line of scrimmage? Is he going to be one of those guys that in training camp we just start hearing they're not sure what they're going to do and maybe he ends up in the starting lineup? You know, something that I certainly would be a fan of. As you guys know, I'm a big fan of his. Here's the thing. The Packers are playing the Colts, the Niners. They're playing the Lions twice. They're playing the Eagles. There are games this year that are really going to test this group. There are games, whether it's the RPO action, whether it's all the, you know, all the different, you know, run game combinations they have with the San Francisco 49ers, all the problems that both those guys up in Detroit give you, the Colts with Jonathan Taylor, and I'm sure their offensive line is going to be better this year. You just have to think that the position that is under the most, not scrutiny, but is going to be exposed or going to be celebrated is going to be that linebacker position because there's going to be some changes up front in the way that the defensive line goes about their business. But when you bring in Xavier McKinney, you bring in a Javon Bullard, you have these guys in the back. Like, I think everybody's pretty confident they're going to be able to make plays. I think where you're looking at is obviously that off corner with Stokes, or is it Valentine? One of those, who's gonna how's that gonna pan out? How are they gonna use those really three or four safeties? Are they gonna use one at the star position in the slot nickel? What's that gonna look like? How's Nixon gonna play in? But like the real thing is, how is this linebacker crew going to improve their ability to make plays at the line of scrimmage and not 8 yards downfield? If they can do that, they got something. All right, let's go to number three. I'm talking about Rich Bisaccia here. So this is the era of we could see another special teams coordinator as a head coach. This is not just a Harbaugh thing now, because they've put in something with the new kickoff return rules that is going to – I've been watching this because I'm going to do some work with the Frankfurt Galaxy over in the European League of Football. And they have already instituted this or something very, very similar, just as the XFL did or the UFL, whatever it is now. This new kickoff idea. And I have to tell you, as you watch rep after rep after rep, it's not as clear cut as to what is going to be successful. And so the ability of Rich Bisaccia to scheme up something, because he's got the best return guy in the business, Keyshawn Nixon. And quite frankly, you bring in Lloyd from USC and you start going, because you can have two guys back now. You start looking at him and you go, okay, there's a guy who's 6'1" or whatever, 6 foot, 220, runs a 4.4 or 4.3 lightning and can get going fast. And what you start seeing in this kickoff coverage, kickoff return game is they're 5 yards apart. As soon as the ball hits the ground or it's touched by the receiving team, both groups can go. And you think there's going to be this there's a couple variations of where you can put two extra guys off that initial confrontation line 5 yards off. So there's going to be some doubles. There's going to be some different things you can do. But ultimately, it looks like a big scrum, like a big messy scrum. And every once in a while, a guy pops through and makes a tackle in front of the 30-yard line. Every once in a while, a guy pops through and has a big play. But for the most part, what I've seen is there's just a ton of just kind of messy scrum guys. The running backs don't really have a clear lane. They're not on different levels like you thought they might be. And so the ability to create doubles, to create gaps, to create, those motion slip looks that we see from the San Francisco 49ers, for example, the ability to do that and create these little lanes where your really good players can get up to speed fast. It really is going to, it's going to do two things. It's going to highlight the importance and the value of a good kicker, because those kickers are going to be able to place the ball wherever, the ability to place a ball where you want it on time is going to be supremely valuable. And then the ability of a special teams coordinator to design and implement a platform of plays or schemes that can adapt to the new system and benefit from the new system is going to be absolutely, I think it's going to be huge. And I just think, Rich is one of those guys who comes off as, someone who's going to be incredibly enthusiastic about the ability to innovate. One question I keep asking myself is, does the size of the people doing the job matter? So in other words, we used to have a ton of backup linebackers and running backs on the team, because all of those guys would fit somewhere in special teams. Do you want bigger players when the space is smaller? Do I want to put in tight ends, defensive line, offensive line guys, knowing that they don't really have to go too far? And, I had some coaches tell me, oh, well, a DB's going to run around them. No, they're not. And if they do, they'll run far enough around them that there'll be lanes. You still have gap integrity. You have good athletes at the offensive line, defensive line, tight end, defensive end positions. So can you afford to have some bigger guys on the return? And what does that look like as far as opening up some of these small cracks to push a Keyshawn Nixon, get to get one-on-one with the kicker? All right, let's go to number four. This is a big one. I want to put this the right way. Does the offensive line take a step forward, even though Aaron Jones is no longer in the backfield. I think this is the biggest question when it comes to the offense. You have obviously lost David Bakhtiari, and I know he's played sparingly the last couple of years, but you always had this, like, well, we're kind of, you know, there's a difference between having a guy who you know is the dude, and then there's this dude that's kind of doing backup stuff, right? So maybe you change protections because Rashid Walker is starting his first game, or when Yosh was in there, you know, he's got two games to back up Bakhtiari. So maybe we're calling the plays a little bit differently because it's not Bach, and you know, there's this reality of like we don't have an all pro back there. But now you have across the board, you have Zach Tom, who is as competent as there is at the right tackle position. You have Jenkins, who's as competent as there is at the left guard position. You probably still have Myers at center. You have a competition with Sean Ryan and maybe the first-round draft pick at the right guard position. You have potentially a competition with Rashid Walker and the first-round draft pick at Jordan Morgan at the left tackle position. But once you establish that, you're probably calling plays as if, like, your guys are in there and there's going to be, like, the gloves are kind of coming off, or are they going to have to do something unique to safeguard a certain spot all year round? Some teams do have to do that. I don't think the Packers are in the business of doing that. Aaron Jones, as everybody talks about last year, and they talk about right now because his contract's coming up, they talk about Jordan Love's contract and how well he played in the last half of this, or the last, you know, six games of the season, postseason. And it's absolutely true. But if you go back and just watch tape and be objective about, you know, what is happening in these games, Aaron Jones is healthy. When Aaron Jones is healthy, he is, you know, he was lighter fluid. He was, you know, all the hyperbole you want to use to describe the effect he has on that offense, the effect he has on that offensive line, the confidence that is gained from having somebody like that in the backfield. As you compare him to the new guy, Josh Jacobs, who's a great player, Aaron averages almost a yard, I think almost a yard more a carry. He has, you know, he has a ton of explosive runs. He's great out of the, he's a different kind of guy. And what we've seen from this offensive line, at least, is that in many instances, they need an Aaron Jones type player to have Aaron Jones type plays. In other words, A.J. Dillon, I'm not going to compare Josh Jacobs and A.J. Dillon, except for, because I think Josh is a much better player, except for the fact that they do have very similar running styles. So if you are going to sit here and say, well, Josh is a great player, Aaron's a great player, they're both great players, we're going to have a similar result, it's not necessarily that easy, because you have to align what that player does well with what you are able to call. And again, this is a big Matt LaFleur thing. Now, because you have so many other good players on the field and you have a very, very good quarterback, it certainly makes that job easier. But without that guy who is getting you, let's be honest, an extra yard per carry every time he touches the ball, opposed to anybody else who carried the rock for Green Bay or the guy who just came in, Josh, you have to just ask the question, what do you do to improve? And we've talked about this before. I think for me, if I'm Adam Stenovich, I'm going to spend more time in that room. I'm going to spend more time on the practice field, at least in pre-practice, talking and working with those guys on some basic fundamentals of the sport, getting really good at the basics again, or for the first time for some of these guys, and just build confidence as much as I can with that room, because we can talk about the receiver room. We can talk about how good these tight ends are going to be, and they're going to be good. We can talk about Jordan Love and his contract, and is he a top 10 guy? Is he a top 5 guy? Is he a 15 guy? If your offensive line isn't good, you're not winning the Super Bowl. You're not winning the NFC Championship. Because you look at the road you got to go through. Detroit Lions have one of the best in the league. Philadelphia Eagles are going to be back this year, one of the best in the league. Dallas Cowboys are not going to be back this year, but they have a very good offensive line. And the San Francisco 49ers have a good center and an all-time elite left tackle. that actually makes up for kind of the average play of everybody else because he is so dominant in the run game, particularly on the backside. And of course, Juszczyk and George Kittle, which we can call them offensive linemen for all purposes here. So how do they get better? I think you spend a lot more time with Stanovich. I think you spend a lot more time becoming masters of your technique. And I think it's going to really come up or down to how Matt LaFleur uses Tucker Kraft. How, if we're going to put those guys in the game, how valuable are they as blockers? Can they be more valuable than they were last year? Do we bring in a true fullback? I got a fullback that's surfing in San Diego right now, Paul Questenberry, six-year Marine Corps officer, played defensive end at the Naval Academy. You want a guy that'll thump? Go hire him. He'll thump. But bring in a guy that has that collision in the hole and moves that linebacker backwards. Let's get a real bona fide. Let's not put DeGuara in there and say, oh yeah, we just close your eyes and pretend he's a thumper. Let's go get a Lorenzo Neal-ish player and just take a roster spot. Because I think that'll really help this offensive line. Because there is going to be this adjustment period from having an Aaron Jones who's got a, he's electric, change of pace, can run. He runs incredibly hard for 205 pounds, but he can break tackles and he can beat guys with his feet. Different style of player now. Very, very effective player, but different style. If you really want to help these guys, you're going to have to up their ability, but you're also really going to have to improve and continue to manufacture yards through the use of your tight ends, and hopefully they bring in a fullback. The last question I have here, and I didn't even write it down because I'm such an idiot, but who emerges from the receiver room as the number one guy? Is it a wide receiver? And I'm just pulling up the depth chart real quick from last year. Leader in receiving yards is Jaden Reed, right around 800. You got Dobbs, you got Dontavian Wicks, Christian Watson, Tucker Kraft, Luke Musgrave, and then you go down. You got Bo Milton, Malik Heath, Torre, who's, I think, going to play a bigger role this year. Listen, for me, who's gonna be that guy? I think we're established now that, and I don't think it's Christian Watson's fault, but because of his hamstring injuries last year, because you're always worried about them, and because, quite frankly, I don't know that throwing the deep ball, that connection is what Jordan Love does best and what this offense is designed to do the best. I think you're probably looking for those, get a guy in space, make him, allow him to, be dynamic, those short to medium range passes, a lot of the in-cut stuff. You just look at kind of what is working around the National Football League and you think, nobody talks about Romeo Dobbs because of Jaden Reed and Dontavian Wicks in particular last year. Bo Melton came in at the end and did a really good job. And you just see all this talent. You see the tight end talent. I know Tucker Kraft had a great year at the end last year, had some good numbers. But you look at Luke Musgrave and his potential as a receiving tight end. For me, I just think Dontavian Wicks is a very, very unique. He's a unique build. He's a unique, talent for given his size. And then it's hard to look past a Romeo Dobbs or a Jaden Reed. Jaden Reed in particular, because he kind of fulfills that role when you start talking about, the Niners and Debo. You just kind of look at him and go, man, you can really give him, you can hand him the ball off. You can run jet sweeps. You can put him in the backfield. You can run screens. You can run, you can run the wide receiver stuff. You can run deep route. He can do everything. And we're in this phase right now, I think, in the National Football League, where if you've got not a Tyreek Hill, but a smaller guy who's well-built and can run through stuff, like, you want to utilize him. The traditional, Dobbs reminds me, I don't know why, maybe it's the number, he reminds me of Robert Brooks. And that is a compliment because he's a phenomenal player. But Robert was the number two wide receiver to Antonio Freeman. I just don't think, when you look back to parallel generations, I don't think that maybe Watson and Free are kind of the same player, obviously. But what we're looking at now with a four wide receiver set or a split out set with that 12 personnel, and having Tucker and Luke Musgrave there, you know, you just really see the opportunity, I think, for Wicks or Jaden Reed to take the next step in this offense and become those guys. Now, having said that, it's very, very likely that when you look at the leaders in receptions and yards next year, you're going to have, let's say, Jordan Love's going to have, you know, 4,500 yards passing, and you've got four guys right around 900, 1,000 yards. I think that's a very, very likely possibility. You got like four guys that are right around 900 yards, and whether they're separated by 50 yards or something like that, like it doesn't make one of them a bona fide number one. I think what's interesting with this group is because you have unique skill sets and every defense has a soft spot, there's going to be nights where you're like, all right, like Watson on the crosser routes, Watson on the deep corners, Watson on the posts, in the cover four stuff, beating that backside safety, like all day. We're going to take four shots tonight, and you're going to have two touchdowns. Dobbs running the intermediate stuff and the outs, you're running the deep digs all night, right? The way they play their safeties and their linebacker spread is just too big. There's too much of a window. Awesome. Reed, Wicks, quick crossers, get the ball in their hand. I mean, there's just these guys are good at a lot of stuff. But when you kind of think about what separates them from their, you know, from each other, there's going to be opportunities for every player to have a big day. And the cool thing is, I think with Matt LaFleur, and I don't know this for a fact, but I would imagine that when he puts in his offense, he's thinking like, and he might even communicate this, hey, this is the defense they're playing. We know what we like against this kind of defense. So we're going to plan for you and you are going to have big days. And here's why. And here's what I'm going to keep dialing up. And if they do this, here's our combat to that. Like he seems like, and I think a lot of coaches, these new generation of coaches, I think they feel like one way to get buy-in with these guys is to communicate exactly how that person is going to have individual and therefore team success versus these specific defenses. And obviously that comes a lot of times from the wide receiver coach, but I think Matt being the play caller and the head coach, I think you're going to get that extra bit of attention, so that what comes with that attention is it comes attention to detail. Here's how we want to make this work. Here's how we want to run this route. Here's the specifics that I'm looking for as the head coach and play caller, so that you know exactly what's going through my head. If you do this, we will do that. So that's a long-winded way of me saying I think Jaden Reed, Dontayvion Witz are going to be the guys that pop out. Having said that, if there were four guys sitting around 900 yards, I wouldn't be shocked at all. I wouldn't be shocked at all. So all that being said, I think we have 2 weeks till training camp. 22nd? No, we have 3 weeks till training camp. I'm out next week. We'll probably do a show the week before that. It's just tough to do shows when there's no tape. I can go back over some other tape and whatnot, but it's tough to do shows. I lose my enthusiasm, and then I'll turn on ESPN and I can't believe what I'm watching sometimes. So I want to just stick to – I love just sticking to the football. I love sticking to the football. But having said that, you guys get with me on MikeWall68 on Twitter, X, and give me some ideas. Hell, maybe we'll look some tape in the next couple of weeks. All right, until then, enjoy yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.